Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to One Up, delivered through the AI podcast channel. I'm your host as ever, Guy Drinkle, joined as usual by Carl. How are you doing, Carl?
Howdy, Guy. How are you doing today, partner?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Oh, God, you've gone full Woody from RDR, haven't you?
Yeah, that's what I was going
oh,
for.
Oh, dear. You know? Oh, God, I don't think I could do that for a whole pod. But we will talk about what we've been playing and... That's just gonna be the RDR bit, but we're not doing. It's not the Red Dead Redemption review just yet. I mean, Carl's probably ready for it, but I am not. I have been a slow burner with that one. But that might be next week or the week after. But in this show, we're going to be talking about comparing generations of console, because I think this is the fifth year of this current one, isn't it, Carl?
It is, as of this month, was the launch of both the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One back in November 2013.
So we thought it just... Well, this is all your idea, actually, so I won't say we. You thought it'd be a good idea to talk about comparing this gen to the previous one and some highlights and possibly some lowlights if we have time. But Carl, as ever, we do start with the news, and there's a couple weird stories kicking about. Do you want to go through?
Yeah, definitely. That's the way I'd describe it this week. You know, kind of some things worth discussing. That's for sure. Number one, we have Activision says it's not happy with Destiny sales, and this comes from Jason Schreier, as always, over on Kotaku. And Jason writes, sales for Destiny 2 Forsaken have not lived up to Activision's expectations. The publisher said today on an earnings call, promising investors a faster content model and new forms of monetization for the game. This comes at a time when the Destiny fan base is as happy as it's ever been, which raises serious questions about the future of everyone's favorite loot shooter treadmill franchise. With Destiny 2 released in 2017, Activision and developer Bungie tried very hard to appeal to as many new players as possible, streamlining many of the first game's esoteric systems and forcing all new characters to start from scratch. Although Destiny 2 earned a better critical reception than the first game, it wasn't what hardcore players wanted, and in the months after launch, Bungie put a great deal of effort into overhauling the weapon system, the endgame, and just about every other mechanic with very productive results. These improvements culminated with Forsaken, an expansion that came out in September to critical acclaim. It's full of level grinding and a regular stream of rewarding activities, along with cool secrets and killer endgame content, which has made hardcore Destiny players happier than they've ever been. It didn't sell enough copies to meet Activision's expectations, however. Quote, some of our other franchises like Destiny are not performing as well as we'd like, end quote, the company said on today's earnings call. That news shouldn't be much of a surprise to anyone who's been paying attention to sorry, who's been paying attention recently. Last week, Activision started giving away the PC version of Destiny 2 for free until 18th of November, a sign of weak sales for the franchise. Quote, "We have not yet seen the full core re-engage in Destiny," end quote, said Activision COO Cody Johnson. Quote, "which has led to the underperformance against expectations to date. Some players are in wait and see mode. If you're in, you're deeply engaged. If not, we think now's the time to bring players back," end quote. And you can read the full story over on Kotaku, of course. I mean, it's quite strange messaging there. It's like, you know, our loyal, dedicated fans who stuck with the game and who have bought Forsaken, you know, are happier than ever, but they're not enough. So screw what they want, and we're going to kind of release new forms of monetization. I mean, that's the message I'm getting there, guy. I don't know what you're taking from that.
It certainly sounds like that, and to be honest, that's an absolute piss take. I love Destiny 1. And I imagine I'm going to talk about it later on when we talk about current gen games and stuff like that. But Destiny 2, it had a better story, but it should have been so much better considering what Destiny 1 was with Taken King. I'm not sure how much you've played of it, Carl, but when Destiny 1.5, let's call it, came out in the form of The Taken King, it was a completely different game. And then Destiny 2 came out, and it seemed to go back to square one. Obviously, it was always going to with your character and stuff like that, and that's fair enough. But in terms of the game, it just felt like it went back to the basics, and it just felt wrong. And I'm one of the people who got Forsaken. I mean, it's not as good as Taken King was, because that was a very difficult task. But it did help fix parts of the game, and it made it more fun. And I really went off Destiny 2. I mean, I'm sure I have 80 plus days in Destiny 1. It did help that, like, you know, I was at uni back then, and all my mates were still playing it. But Destiny 2, it just felt really soulless and lifeless. And then they kind of fixed that with Forsaken. And the fact that they're going to go back to it being a dead game, a bit of a soulless game, in terms of adding in microtransactions that are becoming bigger and more important and stuff like that, because obviously they have them now, but it's just cosmetic stuff. If you can now fast track yourself with money and stuff like that, it's just going to make it even more dead. I mean, it's disappointing, because I think there's already talk of Destiny 3. But if Destiny 2's already on the down and they're going to desperate lengths to get money, maybe they need to rethink the long-term strategy of the franchise. I mean, Bungie, obviously famed for Halo and obviously falling out with Microsoft, but Destiny 1 was a huge success. Destiny 2 probably still is a huge success, but it's not as successful. So maybe the relationship with Activision will sour. Because we know what Activision are about. They obviously have the COD franchise. It's all about money rather than quality, isn't it? We all know that. I imagine everyone's into that, but the games we'll probably talk about throughout this show. You got CD Projekt Red. They refuse to put in microtransactions. I think, well, maybe they aren't Cyberpunk. But they don't make microtransactions a focus. Bethesda never really do them. Rockstar do have them, but again, it doesn't really help you too much apart from online. But again, skill can outweigh that pretty easily on a Rockstar game. Whereas Activision, your EAs and stuff like that, I'm going to have to put them in the same bracket. It just seems to be money before customer, and that's fair. But you need to strike up a balance, really, and that's my take on it. You need to strike up a balance between making money and appeasing your fan base. Whereas I think Activision and EA especially are on the wrong side of that argument for me.
Well put, guy. I mean, I'd agree with what you've said there. Yeah, I mean, I was also kind of a Destiny 1 and Destiny 2 player. With Destiny 1, I played it religiously for a couple of months. I think lasted kind of kind of milked the first DLC, and then we all kind of went off it. Few of us came back for the second DLC. It didn't really hook us back in, and that was kind of the end for us. I heard great things about Forsaken King, but it just had been, or not Forsaken King, sorry, I'm mixing up the two.
That's how you fix the game. Again? Taken.
Taken King. Yeah, Taken King. I heard amazing things, and a lot of people who still were playing it were telling me to come back, but I just thought it had been kind of too long, and my thought was like, why wasn't this in the game from the offset? Because the game was fun with your friends, but it was bare bones. There was like one raid, and there just wasn't much post-game content. Similar then, jump back in for Destiny 2, got into it. But that with Destiny 2, we didn't even last till the first DLC. Didn't buy the first DLC at first because I didn't hear great things. And then I think it was when the second DLC came out, I bought the expansion pass. But, you know, I thought the DLC was awful. Like, it was like, what's the point in this? Like, so the first DLC doesn't even add a raid. It just adds this extra mode or something to the first raid. Like, it seems so lazy. And I'm like, why couldn't they just pack this stuff? Once again, I'm hearing brilliant things about Forsaken, and certain people are telling me, oh, you should give Destiny a go again, but I just think it's been too long. So I guess in this way I'm part of the problem, because I'm a Destiny 2 player that hasn't come on for Forsaken King. But, you know, like, I just, like I did with Destiny 2 from Destiny 1, I'd hope that Destiny 3 will learn a lesson and come out with more content from the offset, so that there is things to do post game. But I don't hold that hope anymore, because it's clear, as you said, it just makes no sense how they learned their lessons with Taken King, and then yet why wasn't that incorporated into Destiny 2? And I mean, is it any wonder that they have this issue that they are players are dropping off, when it just takes them too long to kind of get the game where it needs to be? And I just think it's insane, this idea that they're bringing kind of hinting at microtransactions to life, because that was one of the people's biggest gripes with Destiny 2 was the microtransactions, with the buying the dust and all that. Like, I can't even remember the exact terms, but
silver, I mean, dust.
That's it. Yeah. And people were mad about that. And it seems like we're going to get that again. We're probably going to get a lot of kind of very shallow DLCs like that are probably even more shallow, basically, than the first DLC for Destiny 2 was, which I thought was ridiculous, the price of it, considering how little actually was added. So, I mean, I don't like to see this. And the obviously there was a bit more to this particular story, so I would recommend listeners go and listen, read what else Jason had to write. But Jason kind of indicated that there's, you know, long been kind of suggestions of kind of internal strife between Activision and Bungie in regards to their visions for Destiny. And I did hear there was a story during the rounds a few months back, I'm not sure if you recall, but that basically Bungie won't be working on Destiny 3. And I think it was a Vicarious Visions. I could be plucking that out of nowhere. I'm going to just have a look there. I think it was Vicarious Visions that were being rumored to be taking over.
Who are they? Destiny. What are they famous for, if you know off the top of your head?
Vicarious Visions, what did they... Yeah, well, they worked on Destiny 2 on the DLC. They did the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. They're also doing the Spyro. Collection. They've done a lot of different things across the way. Kind of ports to Wii and DS of existing games, and you know, they've more been kind of known for in the past for porting console games to handhelds, basically. They're a good studio.
Yeah, but I think you got to learn from Microsoft's mistake, though. You can't carry on Bungie without Bungie. I mean, look at Halo 4 and 5. They're fucking shit. Let's be honest. They're awful. The last good Bungie Halo was Reach. And then 4 story was stupid. 5 was okay. Like, I think 4 was just a bit stupid and a bit disappointing. I think 5 was more acceptable, but it was a bit stupid in places. But they're just not the same as what Halo 3 and Halo Reach were in terms of the complete package. Obviously, Halo 2 had a bit of online, but Xbox Live wasn't as big back then. That's why I said Halo 3 and Reach. And then they just went downhill. And that's why I think if Activision, not this, obviously or have the rights to Destiny and stuff like that, but yeah. I don't want all the good of Destiny, which I imagine comes from Bungie, then getting tampered with by another developer. And then if Activision have more influence over this new developer, whoever that would be, it's just going to make it worse. Because if Bungie this is their brainchild, and this is all, if all the good things that Destiny does right is Bungie, and then Activision wants to monetize stuff, make more smaller DLCs more common and stuff like that, it's just disappointing. I mean, I'd love Bungie back with Microsoft, but I don't think that would happen. But I just hope they don't end up with PlayStation or something. But yeah, it's a shame Bungie seem to fall out with people. Hopefully they can fix it up with Microsoft or something and come fix the Halo franchise. But I think that's why they left, wasn't it? They wanted to kill off Halo and move on.
To do something new, yeah.
Which I'd still love.
No, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Destiny. As I still fully expect to get a Destiny 3, and
oh, yeah,
I'd assume by money. This stage, you know, may be interesting. Like, will it be next gen, or will it be? Because I mean, there wasn't much of a gap between Destiny 1 and 2. But to be fair, like, there wasn't much of a change. Like, you know, it's not like a massive update in terms of graphics or anything like that, so it's similar. I think it's the same engine, so it's that's no surprise. But will for Destiny 3, will they do the same thing again, or will they try to, you know, make a kind of more, a lot more change? It will be interesting to see. And obviously at the moment we don't even know for sure that it'll be Bungie developing it, so I suppose on that front we'll have to wait for more news. But it'll definitely be one to watch, you know, especially with these latest statements.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully it gets better, because, as I said, I love Destiny 1, and I really wish it would get back on track. But what else is in the news, then, Carl?
Yeah, so our second story here, Final Fantasy 15 DLC cancelled, Hajime Tabata quit Square Enix. And that's the source is Martin Robinson over at Eurogamer. And Martin writes, Hajime Tabata, the man who brought Square Enix's troubled Final Fantasy XV project home, has quit the company, with a majority of planned DLC for the game now cancelled. The news comes in the immediate wake of Square Enix posting notice of an extraordinary loss of 3,733 million yen, which is just over £25 million. With Luminous Productions, Tabata's recently formed studio cited in the statement, bizarrely, Square Enix made the announcement of Tabata's departure and the cancellation of DLC as part of a special live stream, a continuation of a series it used to keep in touch with fans throughout the latter part of Final Fantasy XV's development. Eurogamer understands that Tabata was presented with the option to have Luminous Productions turn into one of Square Enix's regular business divisions, a course it now seems set on, or spin it off as its own company with Square Enix investment, though he chose to leave altogether. The departure was confirmed internally towards the end of the summer. Final Fantasy XV has been considered a success, with in excess of 8 million units sold and a lengthy DLC tail continuing to bring business in. That DLC has been curtailed, though, with all but one of the four episodes planned for 2019 now cancelled. In regards to my next endeavours and near future, I have a project that I truly wish to solidify as my next challenge after Final Fantasy XV. Tabata divulged on the live stream, quote, as production of episode Arden continues and Luminous Productions works on new projects, I felt that it was time for me to hand over the torch to the next generation group of talented and trustworthy colleagues, and believe that they will create something amazing, end quote. And there's since been an update to this story. Square Enix has been in touch to provide a statement and to assert that, contrary to a part of our report, that Luminous Productions will remain its own division. Quote, Hajime Tabata resigned from his role as the director of Final Fantasy XV he left Luminous Productions and has no further relations with Square Enix or Luminous Productions, end quote, it reads. Quote, we are told that he left for personal reasons. It is with regret to see the departure of such a talented member of staff who applied themselves on Final Fantasy XV and many other memorable titles. We wish him every success for the future and we will continue to cheer him on. End quote. Quote, as to the future of Luminous Productions, the studio was established with the goal to create a new IP, so we are continuing to develop our new title, end quote. And you can read the full article over on Eurogamer. Bit of a surprise. I mean, that's Tabata, who, you know, in more recent times had been arguably the biggest name at Square Enix after he saved the seemingly unsavable project of Final Fantasy 15, in which, you know, for those unfamiliar, that game at one point it never seemed to be coming out.
took a little while, didn't it?
That's it. I mean, like, as someone who is a big Final Fantasy fan, I can remember back in the day before the PS3 had even come out, reading about Final Fantasy 13 and Final Fantasy Versus 13, these two projects that were going to be coming out on the PS3. Originally, they're supposed to be exclusive to the PS3, both of them. And I was like, wow, this is going to be awesome. And like later, it came out that Final Fantasy 13 would be on Xbox, but that Versus 13 would be still exclusive to PS3, and it just kind of went quiet, and there was rumors of cancellation, you know, so it never seemed like it was coming out. But lo and behold, Tabata stepped in and we got Final Fantasy 15, and Final Fantasy 15 was a very good game. It wasn't a great game. It was definitely an unfinished game, hence the need for DLC. But the DLC was supposedly good. I mean, I haven't gotten around to playing any of the episodes yet, but I heard two of the three that are already out are quite good. I've heard the multiplayer game is a bit of fun, the co-op kind of game DLC they released. And, you know, I was looking forward to be honest, I'm not going to lie, before this got announced, I knew that one episode was coming out, that being the episode Arden, which is coming out in March. That was announced in the same live stream. However, I knew Tabata had said he wanted to make more DLC, but I didn't even know it was official that he was going to make more DLC, which has now been cancelled. And it's crazy to think that a game that came out at the end of 2017 was most likely, had they gotten their way, still going to have DLC episodes coming out for it towards the end of 2019. Like, that's a 2-year cycle for a single player game. Like, it seems insane. Like, but what I've found most interesting about this story is, like, I mean, my take on the story just quickly is basically, you know, it's disappointing because I would have liked to see what Tabata would do. You know, I think Final Fantasy 16 is probably already being worked on in one of their other internal divisions, probably well underway. So I don't think Tabata's team would have been taking 16. Though maybe if it got stuck in development hell, he'd have to step in and take over. But maybe Tabata's team would have ended up with him working on Final Fantasy 17 or 18, and it would have been interesting to see what they did, you know, kind of a 2.0 version of Final Fantasy 15, because there was a lot of great ideas there. So I am disappointed in that, but at the same time, Tabata is going to make his own game in his own company. Be interesting to see what happens there. And overall, for me, you know, Square Enix at one point were in a dark age in terms of their Japanese division, like when we were just getting sequels to Final Fantasy 13 that no one asked for, and silly side games and the like. But like now, they've listened to fans. You know, fans said, oh, we want old Final Fantasies. We want old Chrono Triggers. You know, what have we gotten? We got that Tokyo Game Factory, who made I Am Setsuna, which was a great little game, and Lost Sphere, which wasn't as good, but, you know, they're kind of spiritual successes to Chrono Trigger. There's one wish fulfilled. You know, people wanted old Final Fantasies. You know, they partnered to do Bravely Default. That kind of was old Final Fantasy. Recently, obviously, their internal division partnered with Acquire to do Octopath Traveler, which has been a massive hit on the Switch. That's another Final Fantasy, like, inspired by classic Final Fantasy. Kingdom Hearts, another game in development hell, seems to finally be coming out in January, touch wood. Dragon Quest, you know, is finally coming west, and in a big way. Like, we're getting a lot of Dragon Quest titles. Dragon Quest 11, the latest mainline series entry, came out in September, and by all accords, it maybe was overshadowed a little bit by Spider-Man, but it sold really well and it's been a big critical hit, and I'm sure we're going to get a Dragon Quest 12 as a result. You know, Final Fantasy VII remake, will it happen? Will it won't? I don't want to play devil's advocate there, but we hope it happens. But like, and the thing that arguably excites me the most, and this name might mean nothing to you, but it'll mean something to people, is that Hideo Baba, known as kind of the mastermind behind the Tales series, left Bandai Namco to join Square, got his own division in Square, and is working on an action RPG. You know, Square are kind of hitting on all fronts in terms of RPG. So I don't think that the departure of Tabata is, you know, as big a deal as some are making, even though it is still a shame. But I've seen some reactions and people are livid at Square. Like, I'm not sure if you've seen anything, guy, but like, I mean, I was listening to another podcast today, and the reaction of a certain kind of listener who wrote in, I mean, he was ripping Square to bits and saying they'd driven Tabata away and all this, which, you know, that's pure speculation. Anyway, I mean, reading this story, according to Eurogamer sources, Tabata was offered the chance to either head up the division or to have his company spun off with Square investing in it, you know, like, so they wanted to hold on to him. Like, it doesn't seem like they've driven him away at all.
It's not a Konami Kojima situation by the sounds of it.
Exactly. And that's what this writer tried to compare it to. He was comparing it to Kojima and to Igarashi. And I was like, okay, I don't know what's going on. Maybe behind closed doors, it is a negative thing, but there's no reason to jump to that conclusion with no evidence, you know? So I just thought some of the backlash was crazy. And I think, I wonder, is that because of, that's why I thought this story especially, you know, was interesting, is because is that now the thing, especially with Japanese publishers, you know, is everyone going to kind of, every time Capcom make a mistake or Square make, and it's not even a mistake, Square haven't made a mistake here, a staff member has left his job, that happens in places everywhere, it's just he happens to be a particularly notable developer. But I mean, are we now going to get it now where everyone is going to be Konamified? You know, every time something negative happens at Square Enix or Capcom, oh, it's like Konami, it's like Kojima, it's like Igarashi. Like, is that what we're going to get? Like, it's, and, you know, is that warranted? Like, it seems crazy to me, like, that people are just tarring with a wide brush.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds like, well, this current climate of social media and stuff, I think any news can spiral and snowball into a big panic station, isn't it? It's not the calmest climate. That's what I'm trying to get at here. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously Kojima and Konami is probably the most high profile falling out. And I think everything will be compared to that now. But yeah, as you say, it's not been as public and it's not been as long-standing to my knowledge of them falling out. Obviously, Metal Gear Solid 5 was the last one where I haven't played it personally, but all the reviews said it was brilliant, but you saw in many patches where you could see Konami rushing it through where Kojima hasn't worked his magic and stuff like that. And I did play Final Fantasy 15. I didn't finish it. I can't remember why. I did enjoy it, but I don't know, it doesn't seem to have that magic that hooked me in. It was one of them games that once it was ejected, it didn't go back in. I'd probably go back and finish it if I didn't have about a million games to play. But yeah, I think everything will be compared to Kojima. But as you say, if he's been offered these higher up jobs and more responsibility within Square Enix and more trust given by Square, I don't see how it can be that much of a negative unless Square Enix are putting on loads of restrictions, but it really doesn't sound like that, because albeit Square seem to milk a few franchises a bit too much of it, I think that's one of the criticisms of the most recent Tomb Raider, is that it seems to be a step back from the previous two. They're not exactly EA with FIFA or COD either. It's not every year. You still get decent development cycles with it, and it doesn't seem to be as bad as some places. But yeah, I mean, if he's still going to go make games, I don't see the issue.
I mean, that's it exactly. I mean, you're still going to get games from Tabata, and you're still going to get games from Square Enix, and particularly, you know, Luminous Productions, because they're still at Square Enix. I mean, it's not like Square Enix haven't lost big people before. I mean, let's not forget, the most important man at Square Enix left once upon a point time in the form of Hironobu's Sakaguchi, the father of Final Fantasy. Like, he left back in, you know, the early kind of 2000s to form Mistwalker, who bizarrely partnered with Microsoft for their first two games and made them 360 exclusives, a console that wasn't very popular in Japan. So go figure, that wasn't the best decision, but they were good games. Like, Lost Odyssey is what I like to call the true Final Fantasy 13. But, like, you know, people have left, you know, people come, people go, and it's about how the studios react to kind of changing with the times and replacing those people with new talent. While Konami said, screw it, we don't want to bother with much new talent, we're just going to make pachinko machines. You know, Square Enix are constantly creating new studios.
Square's one of the biggest outside of, well, it's in recent times had more exclusive than Microsoft. Obviously, Microsoft trying to fix that. But outside of your Sony's, your Ubisoft's, and your EA's, Square's must be one of the biggest ones.
They're the biggest. I'm pretty sure they're the biggest Japanese company, even ahead of Capcom. I mean, you know, they are, and they even obviously have Western interests with, you know, studios in Canada and the like working on Tomb Raider and whatnot. So, I mean, they're a massive publisher, and they're making a lot of great games recently. I mean, it seems crazy to me that they've gotten such a backlash from this. And I've seen people digging up comments talking about Tomb Raider, how the new one wasn't as good, and why haven't we heard about Avengers? And I just, you know, as you
that's
said,
a good point. Where is it?
it's dead. It's dead.
It's with Final Fantasy VII.
Fantasy VII remake, yeah. Gone to the graveyard of games that never were.
It'll be one E3 in like 2070. It'll be Final Fantasy VII, finally.
Yeah. That's it. Like, but I can't understand the backlash, especially without knowing all the facts. Like, we you know, on the surface it looks like Tabata has left on good terms. So, I mean, we should just take it as its word and move on, and just hope that Square can continue to make good games, particularly good Japanese RPGs for myself. So, I mean, I just thought that one was worth noting, you know, one, because of how infamous that game is because of its development hell, and two, because of just how notable the backlash is. But moving on to more positive, I suppose, news per se. Number three, Red Dead Redemption 2 shipments reach 17 million. And this source for this is Christopher Dring over at GameIndustry.biz. And Christopher writes, Red Star Redemption 2 has sold in 17 million units, Take-Two has announced. Rockstar's parent company revealed that the game has shipped more units to stores in 8 days than the original managed in 8 years. This figure is the number of units sold to retail stores as opposed to sold through to consumers. There's currently no update on its sell-through figures outside of the $725 million the game made in just 3 days, making it the second fastest selling entertainment product of all time behind Grand Theft Auto V. The game is certainly selling ahead of internal expectations, as Take-Two has raised its financial estimates for the financial year on the back of it. It now expects to deliver between $2.55 billion and $2.65 billion in revenue, whereas previously it expected between $2.5 billion to $2.6 billion. Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick said, Red Dead Redemption 2 is now tied with Grand Theft Auto 5 as the highest rated title on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, with a 97 Metacritic score, a massive commercial success. Red Dead Redemption 2 has set numerous records, including achieving the biggest opening weekend in the history of entertainment with over $725 million in retail sell-through during its first 3 days. As a result of our strong second quarter performance and outstanding early results from Red Dead Redemption 2, we are raising our financial outlook for fiscal 2019, which is also poised to be a record year for net bookings and adjusted operating cash flow, end quote. And you can read the full story over on gameindustry.biz. So, yeah, no surprises there. Red Dead 2 is selling like gangbusters. What do you reckon, Guy?
Fully deserved. I mean, Rockstar, and they don't do games every year, every 2 years, every 3 years, every 4 years. They do a game like every 5 years. And the people like that. Clearly, with the two quickest selling titles, and I think GTA 5 is still like the best selling thing in all of entertainment, never mind gaming. So yeah, I mean, Rockstar just makes the most popular titles in gaming. I know you can argue your CODs and stuff like that, but I think Rockstar's just in a different league altogether, if I'm honest. Yeah, 17 million in, what was it, 8 days? That's just brilliant. And you've obviously played more than me, but we've both had good enough time with it. I mean, it for me, it deserves all the plaudits and all the monetary success it's going to bring.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Exactly. I mean, you can, when you take that kind of time with your game and put in that amount of crunch, you know, nice little reference there to the controversy. But, you know, you're going to get quality out of it. And that's what they've done. They did it with GTA 5. They've done it with Red Dead 2. And it was clear that, you know, between the kind of rep, you know, the rep of the first Red Dead, the first Red Dead Redemption, let's get that straight. Not a fan of Red Dead Revolver, but we'll leave that controversial opinion for another day. But, I mean, between that and then obviously the success of GTA 5, Red Dead 2 was always going to be success. Now, will it be as successful as GTA 5? Not so sure, but I think we're definitely going to see at least 50, maybe even 60 million copies of this game sold. Quite possibly could be the best-selling game of the current generation. So, I mean, it's a success. We expected it to be a success. You know, it's almost might not be news. It might be like, and the sky is blue, you know, that's what it comes down to. But it's just kind of interesting to see that statistic that it sold more in 8 days than the first game sold in 8 years.
Thing is, this is without Red Dead Online or whatever they're going to call it being, well, we know nothing about Red Dead Online. I think we pretty much know it's going to be a giant sandbox, and I'm not sure if they've confirmed there's going to be a battle royale, but either way, That's
that's what brought in, that's what made GTA 5 the absolute Goliath that it is. And if Red Dead can even capture half of that, it's probably going to be top two with GTA 5 in terms of sales.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, you're right there. That is such a good shout, because, you know, GTA Online was what gave GTA 5 that staying power. There's so many people who bought the game and didn't even finish the story. I know so many and just went into online. And I think some of those people might be waiting until online launches before they pick up the game. So, I mean, we could see a second flux of sales when Red Dead Online comes on online. So, I mean, there's a lot more legs there to come in this game, and a lot more kind of sales milestones to reach before they're done, I'd say. But, you know, as you said, it's a great game. So, and great games deserve to sell lots of copies. That's pretty much how what it comes down to.
Yeah, yeah. It's good that Rockstar obviously put in too much time on games. Wink number two. But it's good that the work is getting the success that the people at Rockstar deserve. Because, I mean, imagine putting that much time into it and then turns out to be shit. That'd be just horrendous.
True.
But, yeah, I mean, Rockstar made a table tennis game everyone loves, for fuck's sake.
That's very true. I'm not sure they've technically made a bad game. I mean, there was state of emergency, but they just published that, so we'll let them off with that.
Thing is, they've swept that under the carpet, because, like, I only heard about that on another podcast this week myself.
I remember well picking that game up one day in kind of a bargain basket. Oh my god, it's a Rockstar game. Brought it home and I was like, what on earth is this garbage brawler? Oh god, that game. Yeah. But everything they actually developed has been a great game. I mean, even going way back to the Lemmings days.
Oh god. and just wait till Bully 2's out, and then we can go fangirl about that. But I think we've got one more bit of news before
we do. Well,
kind of news.
Yeah, it's almost basically a tweet from Major Nelson, but or based on a tweet anyway. Number four, Microsoft just confirmed some of what will be shown during XO18 live stream, and the source is Laura Kate Dale over on Kotaku. And Laura writes, this weekend in Mexico City, Microsoft is hosting XO18, an event that's a celebration of all things Xbox. While most of us won't be there in person, Microsoft does have a two-hour live stream planned to air during the event, and now there's a little more information on what's going to be shown. Major Nelson confirmed in a tweet that viewers would get to see content relating to Crackdown 3, Minecraft, Sea of Thieves, State of Decay 2, Forza Horizon 4, and additional tweets have referenced some PUBG news, Shadow of the Tomb Raider DLC, and a bunch of Xbox Game Pass reveals. And you can read the full story over on Kotaku. So yeah, XO18 is a thing. It's tomorrow. We will see some news on DLC and stuff for those games. But Crackdown 3, probably the most notable one there, obviously, because it's not out yet and we want it to be out, you know, because some of us, like myself, have, you know, been fans of the series and are looking forward to wrecking a city with Terry Crews, you know. What else do you want in life?
Just do everything with Terry Crews. It'll make it better.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, Even doing your taxes with Terry Crews.
Yeah, just him sat in the room, you know, playing with doing his doing his peck dances would be fine. Make everything better.
Exactly. But do you think, as the Xbox guy, do you think we might get any surprises at this XO18 stream? Maybe some Gears of War? You know, I'm holding out hopes.
I think if it is anything, it would be Gears of War, because Sea of Thieves is dead in the water. Shit pun there.
I like it.
That's a shit pun. I mean, it's a good thing, but I think the way it launched, it needs a big rebrand. I think maybe if they put it, I know it's on Game Pass, but maybe they need to make it free for everyone in a proper dead spell. But yeah, I think the one surprise would be Gears of War. So I think it's rumored for the spring. If not, it'll probably be pushed back to.
Well, I think everyone's going to avoid the winter, aren't they? With Cyberpunk and Last of Us, which obviously I think we discussed a couple shows ago, Last of Us.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think like for Gears of War, especially if it's good, the fall could be a good slot because
yeah.
I mean, my own opinion, you share that opinion. We discussed it a couple of weeks ago. We're not so sure there's going to be a new Call of Duty next year. We think it might be kind of a 2-year cycle for Black Ops 4. Similarly, we know there definitely won't be a Battlefield. And there's no talk of a Star Wars Battlefront 3 either to plug that gap.
Titanfall 3 is that is
a rumor actually recently, and we didn't do a show actually while we were so busy playing Red Dead actually. That's a good point there. Did you hear that rumor?
Yeah, I saw it. They said that Respawn's got both that Jedi Fallen Order
and Titanfall 3 at the same time. Yeah. That is insane. Like, I mean, but you wouldn't put it past Activision after EA after what EA they did with
everyone
with,
at Respawn, just like work faster, you bastards.
Titanfall 2 and Battlefield 1, wasn't it? Yeah, it was Battlefield. Yeah,
I think it was Battlefield 1. Yeah,
you can't put it past them, to be fair. But I mean, I would hope they learn from that and that. You know, maybe Titanfall 3 isn't until 2020, maybe, or maybe early 2020.
Maybe one's ready for the summer. One's ready for the fall.
Yeah, that could potentially be it. But I mean, I'm sure that Jedi game, which is 2019, will have some sort of multiplayer mode. It is Respawn, but it's not going to be kind of a dedicated multiplayer game. So I think, and again, Cyberpunk's a single player game. So I think Gears of War, if it's good, you know, with no Call of Duty and Battlefield potentially in its way, and you know, it could be in a great. It could have like a wide open expanse to regain some of that kind of territory it had in the multiplayer space in the previous gen with like the first Gears of War and 2 and 3. Like, so I'd be really interested to see what you know, Gears can do if it is actually a good game, which we hope it is. And maybe we'll find out more at XO18. That is what I'd hope anyway. That's the main game I'd be looking forward to seeing, and Crackdown 3, of course.
If this isn't out before XO18, people listening to this may have watched it and be like, yeah, there was nothing. hopefully there is something.
Yeah, I hope so, but I mean, I don't want Microsoft to. I don't think they will, Ian. Anyway, I mean, the events in Mexico. No offense to Mexico City, but what I mean is, if they were planning a massive thing, I'm sure they would have done it kind of in the Bay Area, and you know, they would have invited like everyone, and like that's if we're suddenly being told what all their new studios projects are. And I don't want that either, because a lot of those projects are going to be a few years off. They're next gen. I don't want things announced too early. Microsoft's done that too many times anyway. They've announced things early and then they've gotten cancelled. I mean, Scalebound, you know. I don't want to see that, but some Gears of War would be nice, and Fable maybe, you know, because that could be right at the end of this gen.
Fable should be next gen. That should be a launch title for me. That's an easy sell, that.
Maybe, but they've been working on it for a while, so I just don't know. But it'll be interesting anyway. I mean,
means it'll be good.
Yeah, possibly. But I mean,
touch wood.
I'll be tuning in anyway to see what Microsoft have to show.
I mean, I watched the last one where they were just talking about controllers for half an hour, and I'll suffer through that again.
Fair, controllers are right in your wheelhouse. I mean, that's your primary reason for your console of choice, because it's definitely not the games in this gen, which we'll be getting to in a moment. I mean, hopefully they have a couple of surprises for us anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. But
and that is the news.
Good. We haven't done we haven't done the hour yet, but we do have enough time and a decent amount of time to get through this. So it's your idea, Carl. Obviously, I explained it as comparing gens. Do you want to give us a bit more details, and then we'll get into a discussion?
So obviously we're going to be doing our Red Dead Redemption 2 review quite soon, and shortly after that we'll obviously be covering Game of the Year. And that got me kind of thinking that, you know, this year's been, especially the past few months, has been so solid for games. We've gotten Red Dead Redemption 2, Spider-Man, and God of War in the space of a few months, you know, in the same year. Mm. And, like, all three of those games, of course, will be in the conversation for Game of the Year. And I don't want to focus too much on those specific three titles because we're going to be talking a lot about them. And we already have talked a lot about Spider-Man and God of War already. But it got me thinking, like, what other games, I mean, as well, where, as I said, we said earlier, we're in the 5 years into this generation now. So I was thinking, what other games, you know, along with those three, because I think those three games will be games that will be talked about in conversations when we're talking about what games were the best games on that console generation, what were the games that defined that console generation. I was wondering, what other games, you know, at this 5 years in, do we have that also belong in that conversation, you know, of the best games and again the games that define the generation overall? I mean, like the last generation, you know, you think back and you can rattle off so many games: Gears of War, Halo 3, Call of Duty 4, Elder Scrolls 6, Skyrim, mm-hmm. GTA 5, Mass Effect 2, Bioshock, The Last of Us, and, you know, I could go on and on. I'm sure you have your own shouts as well on what belongs in that list. But it felt at one point in that generation that it was just hit after hit after hit. And it was like, where do I spend my money? Where do I spend my time? Like, apart in this generation, I don't know about you, but I've found that it's not as much. There's a lot more kind of quieter periods where there's not these massive games, and you're kind of thinking, like, I think there are quality games across the board. There's lots of great games to play. I'm not saying that, but these kind of defining games, I feel, my personal opinion, maybe that there's maybe less of them in this generation, or maybe it's just that this generation has changed things a bit, and what those kind of games are has kind of changed. Possibly that's something I thought was maybe worth discussing, like what games we think deserve in that discussion, and kind of how we see this generation, like what defines this generation, basically.
Well, in terms of game titles, I definitely think the best is still yet to come in terms of this generation. Obviously, we've talked about Last of Us 2 in passing, that's still to come. Obviously, the first one was touted as one of the best for the last gen. I haven't played it, unfortunately, which people keep having a go at me at. We've got Cyberpunk to come. Obviously, they made The Witcher, which I will mention. I'm dibs in that one, Carl. but what this, just in general, what this one will be defined for, I think the technology more so than anything. I mean, we've obviously had VR, which is kind of been a bit of a passing fancy, if anything. But I think in terms of having 4K so readily available, the services are now much more better. I know PS3 online was a bit shit. Xbox Live grew into what it was today. I mean, the original Xbox 360, Xbox Live was a bit shit. You couldn't have parties and stuff like that. Whereas on Xbox One and PS4, it's obviously been a much more stable process and everything else. So I think, obviously, this is more so from an Xbox point of view. I think the technology's the main thing for an Xbox game, whereas I imagine all the PS4 people be going, "Hey, you got God of War and all that shit. I've played God of War, so fuck you." So, yeah, I think from my point of view, I'd probably say the technology, which is probably not the best thing to say about a 5-year process. But, yeah, in terms of games, I think the best so far, I have to say, is Witcher 3. And, yeah, I think that's the real defining one. But just a point before we start going into more specific titles. I mean, looking, you mentioned, like, Mass Effect 2. I'm not sure when Last of Us came out. And GTA 5 was obviously last gen. They were at the end of the gen, weren't they? The best games that we can remember were the end of the, or towards the last couple of years of Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. So your Mass Effect 2, I think 2010 was one of the big years when, I think it was like Uncharted 2 came out, Mass Effect 2 came out, I think one of the Arkham games came out.
And that was 3 years before the end. And we've obviously said we think it's coming either 2020 or 2021 next gen. So we're kind of in that stage now. And we've obviously already mentioned the games that are possibly coming out in terms of Cyberpunk, Last of Us 2. God, PlayStation will probably crap out a few more exclusives. Xbox, and who God knows what's coming out. You've got your Anthems, your Divisions, whatever Bethesda will get up to in the next couple of years. There's quite a lot more to come. So it's quite interesting to compare it now, but maybe we can revisit this topic in a few years and it might be a completely different topic. But at this moment, I think last gen is definitely battering this one in terms of significant games.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I'd probably agree with that, but that is a fair point you make that, you know, we look at last year as a 7-year cycle, and it was the last 3 years. I mean, you make a great point. I hadn't even really thought of that myself, that, you know, games like Skyrim and GTA 5 and The Last of Us and Mass Effect 2, they came out in those 3 years, whereas maybe in the first 4 years, you didn't have quite as many. You definitely had games like Gears of War, Halo 3, Call of Duty 4 that came out in those earlier years, but you know, maybe, you know, people were still the developers were still figuring out kind of the technology, and it was going to take them a few goes and some time to get kind of the best games out there. And maybe with this first year because we are, according to the rumors anyway, as you say, we 2 more years of the current gen, and then this year would be that third year, and this year we've gotten God of War, Spider-Man, and Red Dead. So maybe we're entering that kind of where the studios are going to start to put out their masterpieces of the generation. So with that in mind, I mean, it is interesting. And as you said, there are games like Cyberpunk and Last of Us 2, to name just a couple, that are probably, even without playing the games, I'd be shocked if they don't end up in this list by the end. And I'm sure there will be other games as well. Like, so that is a great point. But I mean, there has been games, as you said, The Witcher 3 probably is the best. And there's other games like that kind of fit in kind of with The Witcher 3 as more kind of what we traditionally think of when we're making these lists, and what would maybe be closer to the kind of games we had in the previous gen's list. But for me, oddly, when it comes to this conversation, the first kind of games, you know, if you're being honest, even if they're not for you, that come to mind when it comes to this generation are, you know, these kind of, I don't know, you know, these long lasting multiplayer games, some games as a service almost, you know, Fortnite, Overwatch, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, Rocket League, those four in particular, like, they are synonymous with this generation. And, you know, I'm sure we've all dabbled in at least one of those games, maybe all four. You know, I'm sure we'd like at least one of those games. I mean, I really like both Overwatch and Rocket League. I don't get to play them as much.
Are we getting old, Carl? Is that the point here? The gaming universe has just moved on, and we're not getting these brilliant single-player games. Because I think people, the next generation of gamers, not games, they seem to be all about multiplayer, whereas I'm sure you'd agree with me here. I don't think you can top a single-player experience. I mean, I'm sure we all have our favourite Call of Duty experience, but like mine's 5. Some people might be 4 or 6 or whatever. Whereas now people's favourite experiences will be Fortnite. I'm not even going to put PUBG in this discussion. Now people's favourite experience will be on Fortnite, because that has been such a Goliath for, what, the last 2 years? 18 months, whatever it's been. So yeah, I think Fortnite is definitely the one that changes the landscape, whereas these big games are now getting destroyed by a free-to-play game. But yeah, maybe the spectrum's changed, because, I mean, can you think of anything that was on Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3 that was, let's not say free, but was cheap and had this impact? Because I certainly can't.
Not really. Like, I mean, as I said, that we mentioned multiplayer games for the last gen, like Gears and Halo and Call of Duty. But, you know, they were games, they had some staying power. They probably had maybe a life cycle of a couple of years before sequels came along and kind of took the wind out of their sails pretty much. But, I mean, they didn't have the kind of life. Like, how long, as you said, Fortnite's been doing gangbusters for what feels like a couple of years now. Overwatch even longer. PUBG kind of died down a bit, but it's still there. And
Minecraft.
It's coming out on PS. Yeah, that's another one. I didn't even think of that. But now that, I suppose the argument there was that last gen. It technically was, but it's still,
I think that's PC more than anything, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, true. But I mean, it's definitely still one of those kind of games, even despite what gen it originated in. And I mean, those are the, even if they're not for you, those games are the big games. You know, only yesterday I was in the pub and there was a little kid walking around in a Fortnite hoodie. You know, the game is just, that game is, it's almost beyond the game in terms of its popularity. Like, and it, like, it's just insane that these games, I never would have, like, as I said, I picked up Overwatch and I got really into it, and I do really enjoy it. It's probably one of my favorite multiplayer games, probably is my favorite multiplayer game of this current generation. But like, when I played it first, I didn't think it was going to turn into what it has. And it's crazy. You know, as I said, hate or love these kind of games, they are here to stay. Literally, you know, people are still going to be playing Overwatch and Fortnite and Rocket League, you know, in a year, in 2 years, probably in 3 years, or those games are probably going to end up being on the next gen, or maybe at least sequels to those games. I mean, that's the kind of staying power they have. And I think it's strange to me that they are the first kind of games that come to mind when I kind of think of games that define this generation. But you have to say that they do. I mean, there was weeks where it was a running joke between you and I that Fortnite would pop up on the news every week, because it was popping up on the news every week. So, I mean, you can't deny it. Like, those games are massive. And although, like, we might have somewhat limited experiences of them, as I said, I haven't actually played PUBG, but I've played the other three. And as I said, I really enjoyed Overwatch and Rocket League, but and I still play them now and again. But I mean, you can't talk about this generation without talking about those four games. And as you said, Minecraft as well, even though it technically straddled the generations, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, I think Overwatch is kind of transformed competitive gaming as well. I mean, that obviously they brought in the Overwatch League and stuff like that. That I think, I'm not sure if it was one of the most watched things on Twitch. Obviously, I don't know. I haven't looked into those statistics because it just jumped into my head there. But it was probably the first. I mean, I've watched a couple Halo competitions and stuff, but Overwatch was the first one I was like, this is pretty goddamn cool. And I think that's what Overwatch has really done. It's revolutionized competitive gaming, as well as casual gaming, because it is such an easy game to play. I mean, obviously everyone has an experience with Call of Duty, Battlefields. They're the main two, but Overwatch is kind of, obviously it's a character class based shooter, but it's so easy to play. It attracts all the audiences. You've got your characters for your kids, you've got your hardcore competitiveness for your hardcore gamers, and if you're not into that and you just want a game to piss about on, it's everything. Whereas Fortnite, you could say the same. You can either be mint or you can go for a piss about. PUBG, you can't really do that. You have to concentrate on PUBG. I think that's why it's probably bottom of this list. Rocket League's probably the king of piss about games, isn't it? So, I think the versatility of these games, whereas obviously I just mentioned The Witcher there. That's not linear, but that's a very one way to play that game. You have to be into your RPG games to play that, whereas there's so much flexibilities in these shooters and stuff like that. It's kind of redefined this gen, which is either good or bad. But I mean, even if we compare it to last gen, obviously we mentioned Gears of War, your Halos, your Call of Duties, but they don't have the flexibility of these games, whereas
Call of Duty 4, you could probably... Well, I was younger, so I was less of a... I was still a bit of an angry gamer, but I mean, you wouldn't concentrate on it as much back then. You'd obviously take the piss. Halo 3, you obviously got Forge mode and all that, so that's got a bit of flexibility. Gears of War, you had to take it very seriously, or you'd get destroyed. But I don't think anything compares to Fortnite, especially in that gen. So it's a bit of a weird one. But if we go back to notable titles, I've obviously named The Witcher 3. Carl, is there anything that jumps out for you on this current gen? I mean, let's try to avoid this year because obviously can't go on about Gears of War and Spider-Man. But is there anything that's jumped out before this year?
Yeah. So There have been notable titles, even if maybe they haven't been quite as numerous as they were in the last gen so far, as you most importantly pointed out. I mean, you know, going towards kind of closer to the start of the gen, you had Shadow of Mordor, which, you know, people forget about it, and people, because of how bad the second title went down with all its microtransactions and whatnot. But I mean, Shadow of Mordor was a game of the year, like, you know, a widespread game of the year. I mean, what was at its core, you know, an Assassin's Creed clone, but it just totally changed the game with its nemesis system. And, you know, obviously the Lord of the Rings setting helped, and people loved that game. I loved that game. Like, it's one of my favorite games of the gen so far. And I mean, that was arguably one of, if not the first big game for me of this gen, and one of the earliest titles that probably will remain in the conversation. I mean, Bloodborne, another early enough title that people love. I mean, only last night a friend of mine was talking about Bloodborne. He's a big fan of the Dark Souls games, and I think you still see, I hear about people like streamers and stuff that are doing like their fourth and fifth playthroughs of that game on their stream. Like, so that game, like, it's got staying power, and it's definitely got its fan base. Last year was a big year as well, in that you got Horizon Zero Dawn for PS4, Breath of the Wild for Switch, and Super Mario Odyssey. I mean, did you play any of those?
I tried to play Horizon Zero Dawn, but it just didn't really connect with me. I can appreciate that it's a brilliant game and stuff like that, but obviously PlayStation is my secondary console. I was being a bit of a bitch with that. I mean, I struggled through Uncharted 4 with it being bitchy. And then I wanted a PlayStation 4 for Horizon Zero Dawn, so maybe there was a bit too much expectation for me. And I don't know, it just didn't feel like a game that connected with me. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad game or anything like that. But, yeah, it just didn't blend with me. I mean, I think now, if maybe I'd go back and play it now, but since I've been on the PlayStation 4 recently, I've obviously finished Spider-Man within like a few days and God of War within a week or two as well. So it might, maybe it was me getting over the PS4, but it may have just been a game not connecting with me. But it might be one for me to go try again, but it just didn't click with me like the way that Spider-Man and God of War did. So for me personally, I wouldn't put it in that same bracket, but I imagine if Stu and Neil are listening, they'll probably like come fight me now that I've said that. But yeah, it just didn't click with me, and I wouldn't put it on that upper echelon with the two other PlayStation ones I mentioned.
To be honest, it's difficult for me to put it up there, not because I disagree with it being up there, but because I've played so little. You know, I played it, I enjoyed the little bit I played, and I want to go back and play more. But, you know, at the time, I just got kind of sidetracked with other things. So it's definitely a game. It's high up on my kind of backlist, and I will definitely get to it. And I'm sure by the end of the generation, I'll be hopefully talking about it, you know, as one of the better games. But I you know, honestly, it's difficult to, you can't, obviously, you know, the hype behind that game is there. As you said, the guys in the group love it. And, you know, you listen to podcasts, you read articles, you know, it's clearly that it was a critical hit, and also a commercial hit, to be fair. It sold fairly well. So, I mean, I think it, without even having played much of it, I think it it is a safe inclusion here. The Switch games, I mean, have you had any experience at all with either of those? Or
The only thing I've played on Switch is Mario Kart, and I lost my shit. So, no.
I played a little bit of Super Mario Odyssey on a friend's Switch at one point. Like, I could tell it was a good game, but to be honest, I've never been crazy on 3D Mario games. I'm more of a 2D Mario player when it comes to Mario games. I could tell it was a great game. Again, don't get me wrong. And it looked cool. Like, I loved the art in it. But, I mean, it just, you know, it's not my kind of game. But I can appreciate what it is. Zelda, I actually own Zelda for the Wii U. Yeah, you know, I'm a nonconformist good there, God. But I haven't gotten around to playing it. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Sticking with my Wii U and my second screen experience. But I mean, you can't deny the kind of the hype behind that game. And I remember that and Horizon came out within like it was basically like 6 weeks each other or something. So it was like kind of,
I think Zelda
was the open world battle
as well, didn't it?
Yeah, overall it was Game of the Year last year. So I think
that's
in most
just
publications.
Popped in my head there, Carl. Obviously, you've just mentioned the two games of the year from last year, and I can't remember where this actually came, but I'm not sure if they actually order it. But in this gen, we've seen the redevelopment of Assassin's Creed, haven't we? It's turned into a big RPG game. Which I think is quite a big step for something like Ubisoft, because Assassin's Creed was falling into that category with your FIFAs, with your CODs, where it was every year and it'd be a safe buy. You knew it'd be passable. I mean, there's a couple of bad examples of Assassin's Creed games, but I think all of them are playable to a certain degree. But they obviously took that break in between, and now it's a big RPG game. And I think people appreciate that. I know some hardcore fans. I know one of my mates, Rob, he prefers the old style of it. But I think in general, most people would quite like the big, expansive RPG version of Assassin's Creed. Maybe the fact that it's called Assassin's Creed doesn't help. But yeah, I think that's quite a big step. I mean, main companies like Ubisoft still have a place for the hardcore gamer rather than the casual gamer, because I think that's what Assassin's Creed was. It was perfect for the casual, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always enjoyed Assassin's Creed, but there was definitely, even with the better games series like 2, there was definitely there was some things left to be desired. But I mean, I can't input too much into the conversation because I haven't gotten around to Odyssey or Origins yet. But by all accounts, I mean, they're the culmination of the Assassin's Creed kind of formula. I mean, we talked about Shadow of Mordor before being kind of a subject of that formula as well. And I mean, if we're giving that a shout out, you know, you have to give those games a shout out because by all accounts, I mean, if it wasn't for the existence of Red Dead and God of War, you know, Assassin's Creed probably would be Game of the Year this year. Mm. You know, even last year, there were a lot of people that put the argument in for Origins last year, and
it wasn't even quite as
popular as Odyssey is. Like, so I think, you know, one if not both of those Assassin's Creed games have a fair shout to be in this conversation, even if in the last generation, I don't, as good as Assassin's Creed 2 was, I don't think I'd quite put it in that upper echelon. Like, it's maybe on the level just below.
Yeah, if you had a personal choice, I mean, I'd be putting Black Flag. I don't think it was in my top 10 of games. I think it was in the shout there, but I wouldn't say it's one that defined a generation of games. But yeah, I think I still don't think these two new ones are going to define this generation, but I think it's a big step for a franchise. But I've asked what we're discussing in our WhatsApp group, and Simon's mentioned a couple games. I thought I'd go through. I'll start off with Warframe. Again, another free to play game that's quite popular. I don't think it's not in the same bracket as Fortnite or Rocket League or anything like that, but I think that's still a big choice there. But he's mentioned one that maybe part of defining a generation for Xbox is DayZ. Obviously, we've seen these games like your Ark, your Conan, I can't remember the Conan Exiles, I think it's called, your DayZs, these ported games, or not ported, these games from the PC. And I think that's kind of what Xbox has done this gen. They've tried to separate the gap to Windows and stuff like that. So maybe that's wrong or right from whatever perspective. But I think they're trying to cross that bridge where PC games can be played on your Xbox. So I'm not expecting like World of Warcraft on my Xbox anytime soon. But you got your Ark Survivals and stuff like that. I can see more of them coming on the Xbox.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. I'm like Ark and DayZ. I'm not sure they similarly, you know, to as you said about Warframe, they don't quite belong on that echelon of a Fortnite, but they're definitely an example of the similar thing. As you say, it's kind of a graying almost of the lines between consoles and PC, but a lot of these games coming across, obviously PUBG is a prime example of that. And
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think it's a fair shout that you know, those games as a whole, as we were discussing earlier, you know, it goes beyond just those four games we mentioned. You know, these games as well apply, that all these games at all, they're going to be games that are going to be associated with this generation because of that trend, because of the trend of these not always free to play, but free to play or somewhat cheaper games that have staying power, that people are playing these games for 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, they're definitely a feature of this game and or this generation, and I think they definitely deserve to be in the conversation for that reason. So that's a very good shout. Actually, while you kind of we've been mentioning Game of the Year a lot, and I thought, you know, what other games have been Game of the Year in recent years? And one I didn't really think of, despite me playing it only last year, I got around to it and putting over 100 hours into it, is Dragon Age Inquisition.
Sure.
Which won a lot of rewards in 2014 for Game of the Year. I mean, that was a great game, and it was the while Mass Effect kind of slipped away in this generation with Andromeda, I think Inquisition was probably the culmination of efforts into the Dragon Age series, though Dragon Age 2 was crap, so it wasn't really hard. But nonetheless, I mean, it is that's a fair shout. Like for that deserves to be mentioned in this conversation. I mean, did you play Dragon Age Inquisition at all?
Yeah, loved it. It took me 2 attempts to get it. One of my mates recommended it to me, and then I think he went to the Falklands because he's part of the RAF, and he was expecting me to have it finished when he came back, and I was like, no. And he was kind of disappointed. Yeah. Then he eventually just made me play it. And yeah, I'm not sure how this didn't pop in my head, but it's definitely one of my favourite games of this generation.
Yeah, mine
100%.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. But in terms of, obviously, it's just reminded me now. I mean, I'm looking through the games of the year as you brought it up. Uncharted 1 2016, not my cup of tea. I thought Overwatch should have won that year. But the previous year, Fallout 4 won in 2015. And I obviously mentioned talk about disappointing games from this generation. I think we kind of sparked this conversation in WhatsApp group, didn't we? And I think it was Neil who said Fallout 4, it just wasn't what people expected. And I know it's still quite popular, but I haven't finished Fallout 4, and I thought it'd be one of them games I love, but I just found it a bit cold and a bit long-winded. But I know you're a bigger Fallout fan than me, and I know we're going to try and talk about Fallout 76. Maybe this is a good segue, but what are your thoughts on Fallout 4 as a defining game, and is it a disappointment? And any games that are disappointing for you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that is a fair shout. I mean, it's obviously sometimes especially with Game of the Year, you know, there can be games you know, that gets kind of picked by certain publications and you're surprised. But I mean, we were discussing Destiny earlier, and I know a couple of publications gave Destiny 1 Game of the Year that year, despite the fact overall, critically, like it wasn't kind of a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 game, as most games that would be Game of the Year contenders usually are. And like, ultimately, when you look at Destiny critically, I don't know how anyone could say it was a Game of the Year, even though, and that's coming from me, someone who put a couple hundred hours into the game. So I found that kind of strange in that way. But I mean, similar, Fallout 4 is a good example of that. I mean, you know, I was massively hyped for Fallout 4. As you said, I'm a big Fallout fan. I finished Fallout 3 twice, and you know, finishing that game, you're talking 100 hours ago. I mean, I finished New Vegas and put a lot of time into that, and I was so hyped for Fallout 4, and it came, and I kind of, first few hours, I was so excited, really into it, and then I was kind of like, meh, this is kind of more the same. It's good, but it's not great. You know, the engine hasn't really been overhauled from Skyrim, despite us being in a new generation. The city, you know, if you were not to tell me what city we were in, I'd just be like, are we still in the city from Fallout 3? Because, you know, everywhere looks the same, which I suppose they're restricted by the setting. I mean, it is a post-apocalyptic world. That's what it's going to be like. So I suppose they are, that's unavoidable. But it was nonetheless something that stood out to me. And I just thought, like, even the DLCs, or no, Fallout 3 had some of my favorite DLCs ever, and Fallout 4 just quite didn't have it. So it's a strange inclusion to me, you know, whereas I'd be more talking about, like yourself, I'd be considering it one of the bigger disappointments of this console generation for me personally. But I mean, if someone else, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, as we said, I think it was DICE actually that gave a Game of the Year in 2015. So I mean, if DICE can give a Game of the Year, I think, you know, I'm sure there are people who will mention that in this conversation. And I think that's the interesting thing when you come to a conversation like this, while you're going to have a certain list of games that most people are going to mention, you're going to have surprises. And I mean, I think, you know, we obviously will segue into Fallout 76 soon, but one other thing I think is worth mentioning, and it was somewhat a feature of the last gen as well, but a little less so, is you know, indie games, you know, kind of they're kind of the games that all, you know, some people mention, some people don't, and people have their own preferences. But I mean, you look at some games that jump out to me, like Inside. You know, Inside, obviously, Limbo, which was the first game from that studio, is probably one of the indie games that defined the last generation. But Inside, there are people who argued for Inside to be Game of the Year when it came out. I mean, it most publications seem to have it finishing second, if not first. I mean, it was a massive hit. What Remains of Edith Finch won Game of the Year last year from some publications. And, I mean, and Undertale, like another massive indie game that is like a kind of, you can't avoid hearing about it, especially now, obviously, that the creator has announced his new game. Are there any indie games that you think kind of deserve to be in this conversation?
The best game I've ever played is a game called Miner Dig Deep on the Xbox 360. And that's an indie game. It's proper basic. It's just a mining game. You get to the end, you get a diamond, go home, start again. But it's probably the most addicting experience I've ever played on a game. It's just a basic game, and I've never replaced that feeling. Like, there's obviously been better games, there's been more brilliant games, but I think that's what this gen's missing. Obviously, there's some brilliant indie titles that are quite bigger. I know you were an Xbox 360, but do you just remember going on the Xbox 360 marketplace and just looking at the indie titles, and there were so many shit ones that you're just like, I'd play the crap out of that. I know you can still do that this gen, but it just doesn't seem to be the same to me from the Xbox 360 days.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think, like, overall, you know, there are more indie titles this gen, and because it's easier for indie studios to publish their titles, I think the platform holders are a bit more easy on that. And also they see the importance of indie titles, and as a result, there are more great indie titles. I mean, again, I'm a game I'm hoping to get around to playing this year, Celeste, which is a game that's probably going to be in the game of the year conversation for most publications, is an example of that. And you know, there's been some other great ones this year, like arguably more than ever this year, like that people talk about a lot. You know, The Messenger is another one. And, you know, so I think there's more of an abundance. But at the same time, because there's more of an abundance, that's also a negative impact. And I think that probably plays into what you're saying, that like in the last gen, there were less of them. They were more noticeable, even the bad ones. And I think it was almost, it was a kind of indie titles previous to that, before the Xbox Live Arcade, indie titles had kind of been a PC thing. Us console players didn't really have that. So the idea of these little games, you know, some of which were inspired by like the games we would have played back in our childhood, you know, it was kind of, there's a charm to them. And, you know, and especially when the great games, you know, the Braid and Limbo and Bastion, you know, these quality titles, I mean, that still have, you know, they're still popular today. I mean, I don't think Braid has been ported, but I know obviously Limbo and Bastion have been ported to modern consoles. I only completed Bastion there recently, like, so having first tried to play it years ago and just couldn't finish it. But I mean, so I get what you're saying. I think it was more kind of it was more exciting, maybe, almost, these arcade titles, because they were new at the time and they were easier to notice. But I think, you know, as I said, there are definitely some titles, you know, in this gen that are belong in this conversation and ultimately are going to be in this conversation. But as you said, most importantly, which is why we probably will revisit this topic probably on the eve of the new consoles launching, where we'll look back on this generation as a whole. And I wouldn't be surprised if the lists that we're discussing now doubles in size over the next over the next couple of years, because there's so many great games on the horizon. I mean, there's, you know, as a lot of people say, and it's true, there's no better time than to be a gamer than now, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And Carl, I know, well, I think we're about 1:25 into the show, but just your quick thoughts on Fallout 76. I'm not sure if you had experience with the beta. I did. I ended up cancelling my pre-order. I mean, it wasn't because the game was bad. It was just the fact that it's RDR2 season. I haven't finished Assassin's Creed. I've got RDR2 to finish still. It's probably not going to be on sale for Black Friday, where you always pick up the odd thing. And I think they've just kind of mistimed this. And my mate, obviously, these types of games where it's an MMO type thing, survival thing, you need mates to play with. And one of my mates pulled out of buying it, so I just think it's one of them games that it might flop in the short term, but I think it might get better in the long term. I think, obviously, you've got to compare it to Elder Scrolls Online. I don't think it'll be as good as that, if I'm honest, off the little bits I've played. But you're the Fallout fan. I mean, what are your thoughts on Fallout going to multiplayer and all this?
Honestly, I mean, we discussed this recently in the WhatsApp group, and, you know, honestly, I have very little interest in this game, and I don't expect it to do well, to be blatantly all honest. I mean, I just, when it was first announced, I was kind of like, oh yeah, cool, multiplayer Fallout, I'll play that with my mates. And then I kind of like read previews and watched things, and I mean, you know, kind of thought about it really, and I was like, you know, but honestly, I'm probably going to be playing Red Dead Online with my mates. I don't think my mates are probably going to get this. That. And yeah. I mean, even when Red Dead starts to die down maybe a little, then you're going to have things like Anthem in the spring. And, you know, you said, is it the right time to release it? Maybe not, but the spring's clearly not the right time to release it, because I think, you know, I think, honestly, Anthem's probably going to have more behind it than Fallout would. And so probably The Division 2. Yeah. So
they had to undercut RDR, 100%.
I don't know yeah, I don't know why they've made this game. I don't understand this game. I mean, Fallout isn't a multiplayer game. I mean, and if you were going to make a Fallout multiplayer game, go the whole way. Make a Fallout MMO. I mean, long-term Fallout fans will know that Interplay, the company that used to made the original Fallout games, they, when they sold off the game, they retained the rights to make a Fallout MMO. They were taking so long to make it, and then suddenly, like Bethesda, there was a bit of a legal struggle, and Bethesda came out with the rights to the MMO. And I thought, okay, when obviously Elder Scrolls Online starts to die down, we'll probably get Fallout Online, fine. But like, why are we getting this middle step, this kind of co-op Fallout almost? I just don't understand it. Like, for me, the charm of the Fallout is the story, the world, the characters. But this is just like a dead world where you're just going around with your mates shooting kind of super mutants. And don't even get me started on how they've retconned the whole story that super mutants are supposedly now in that area, even though they shouldn't exist, and how, because it's conveniently another strand of the virus, and how the Brotherhood of Steel that weren't supposed to be found, not supposed to have emerged for another like 50 years or something, are suddenly in this game. Like, it's a total mess to me. And I mean, as we said earlier, I mean, Fallout 4, you know, didn't really make great strides from Skyrim in terms of the engine and that. And, you know, this game doesn't look to have made many strides from Fallout 4, a game which came out 3 years ago and already seems somewhat dated in some ways. So I don't have, you know, much interest in this. And I don't think it's going to do that well. I mean, the beta, you know, their damning thing, you cancelled your pre-order. I know, as you said, it wasn't just because of your opinion on the game. It was to do with like kind of external factors like other games and that. But nonetheless, those things apply. And like the previews haven't been great. And like what was me was the final nail in the coffin where I said, yeah, I'm probably not going to get this game, was when they allowed a few kind of game publications to play the game. And they had gameplay videos on, and it was like an hour or something. And I was watching people play that, and I was just like, wow, this looks awful. This is like this boring, empty world. And my interest just dropped to zero, which compare that to like, which is a good comparison. Cyberpunk, a game that also had an hour of gameplay released in kind of recent months. And I don't really like watching game. I'll watch short gameplay clips, but I don't want to watch an hour of a game because I'm like, I'm going to play this game. I don't want it ruined on me, but I couldn't look away. Cyberpunk, I watched the full video. I was like, this is quality. And I mean, I think just like The Witcher 3 came out, and I mean, we didn't talk too much about that previously, but I mean, that is what an open world RPG should be. And I mean, that was the game that probably made Fallout 4 and Bethesda look a little silly.
Yeah.
So now I'd say, like, what is Cyberpunk's probably going to do the same again from CD Projekt? And I just, for me, I know obviously they backed this game, they've put money into it, but I just, if I'm Bethesda, I probably just would have read the tea leaves and said, yeah, we're pulling the plug on this. You know, they've, you know, forget Fallout 76. Because, I mean, I even laughed at, you know, there's been a bit of a backlash about the game. And you look at, like, P. Hines made some comment, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the quote in front of me, but he was basically like, relax, we're working on stuff you're going to like. You know, we've got Starfield, and we've got Elder Scrolls 6, you know, coming in the future. And it's like, okay, so you know what we like, you know what we want, so why are you giving us Fallout 76?
I think the fact that Zenimax is making it, aren't they? They obviously made Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, it's Bethesda, and then it's like are kind of involved, and then it's also let me have a look actually who the other studio is that they're kind of primarily responsible for it. Have a look there now. It is the developer. Oh, it says Bethesda Game Studios, but I think technically it's somewhat the classic Bethesda Studios, you know, with Todd Howard having somewhat of an involvement, but it's largely been done by like a second Bethesda Game Studios. Apparently three studios involved: Bethesda Dallas, Bethesda Austin, and Bethesda Montreal. So clearly, You know, I even look at Todd Howard's not the director of the game. He's an executive producer. So, I mean, that says it all. It doesn't even have Todd's hand completely in it. And, you know, you need Todd. We just need more Todd. So it's not enough Todd in this game for me. So I'm going to be giving it a pass. I mean, do you think you'll play it eventually, Guy? I know you said you canceled your pre-order, but do you think maybe in January or something, if Red Dead dries up a little bit, you might give this a go?
No, I think it might be a next summer job, if I'm honest, because these are the sort of games that get better over time, aren't they? I mean, if you look, Elder Scrolls Online is the natural comparison, but if you compare that at launch to a year or so on, it's probably a completely different game. And I think this will kind of be the similar situation with this. So maybe when there's that summer lull next summer, it'll be one to pick up then, because... What is there? The early on, there's Division 2, there's Anthem, as we mentioned. I think Skull and Bones, which I'm really looking forward to, is coming out as well.
True.
And there's probably many more that I can't think of off the top of my head. So I think I'm waiting for that summer, probably that first summer sale on Xbox, and hopefully it's there. Because I think Bethesda love a sale. There's always those games on sale, isn't there? There's always Ubisoft, there's always 2K games, and there's always Bethesda games on sale. So yeah, I'm waiting for that to be on sale, if anything. And hopefully if I pick it up for 30 quid, that it won't sour my opinion on it, because if I paid 60 quid for it and then I'm not asked about it for another 6 months or so, that's going to annoy me.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. I mean, we talked about Destiny earlier, and it's Taken King and Forsaken moments, you know, and Fallout 76 is somewhat, you know, in the same kind of wheelhouse as Destiny. So maybe Fallout 76 will have its Taken King style expansion and so maybe become something good in the next 6 months. But I'm just, as I said, I didn't even stick around for Taken King. So if I'm not jumping on Fallout to begin with, I'm not sure I'll ever kind of give it a try, which is a shame, as you know, as I usually kind of jump into everything Bethesda. But you know, I think I'll be holding out for Starfield personally.
Yeah, I mean, if I don't end up getting it, unless it ends up like free or in Game Pass, which again Bethesda seems to do quite commonly, it might be one I just avoid, if anything, because I imagine there's going to be one more Bethesda title before this gen finishes, because obviously Skyrim was kind of the very end of it, and I doubt Bethesda will want to leave it on possibly a sour note. Obviously we'll see what it's like when all the reviews and stuff come out after release, but it might be one to discuss on the next show, see what the initial release reaction is.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be one to watch, see if they've kind of maybe taken some criticisms. I've already seen some stories, to be fair to them, where they've kind of come out and said, yeah, that's a problem. It'll be solved for the actual game. So, you know, at least they're trying. And you know, to be fair to Todd Howard, he has come out and talked about a lot that this is a beta, and there's a reason they do betas, and so hopefully they can. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Bethesda, and I'm rooting for them, and I'd like nothing more than Fallout 76 to prove me wrong and be a good game. I'm just not that hopeful at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll finish up on Fallout 76 there, and I mean, we've already gone over time, so I might as well ask you what you've been playing, Carl.
Well, I've been playing a little old game called Red Dead Redemption 2. Maybe you heard of it.
Yeah, is it any good?
It's great. I mean, it's just an awesome game. I mean, as you said earlier, like we hopefully will be reviewing it soon. And, you know, I'm, as you said, ready to review because I've finished the game. I mean, I've been doing nothing but playing this game for the past... almost two weeks now. It's 2 weeks today since it came out. You know, I'm in the second half of the epilogue currently. But I would have obviously went to finish that if we had been reviewing it today. But nonetheless, I'm glad I get to kind of take my last bit of time kind of exploring and doing a bit more hunting and whatnot. I mean, the game is absolutely massive. I don't know how you can check your playtime, but part of me is fearful of checking it because it's probably something crazy at this point. Like the amount of exploration, the side quests, the hunting, the story. Like the story never seemed to end. I thought like at one point I was like, oh, I'm close to the end of the story, and then things was like 15 more missions. You know, it's crazy how long this game is. Like, and it is a great game, and we are obviously going to review it in depth more. So, you know, and there are a couple of criticisms, but I'll save them for then. But I mean, all in all, this is a fantastic game, and I mean, it's no wonder it's getting the hype it is, because it is deserved. What are your impressions so far?
Just checking my game time. I've played 38 hours so far.
Where do you check it?
On Xbox, you can just check on your achievements and stuff, and it shows up.
We don't have that in PlayStation.
Yeah, 1-0. We'll finish the pod. No, but yeah, I've played 38 hours, and I'm on chapter 4. But yeah, I've had a bit of a busy week trying to sort some new stuff, but I will be back in the groove and playing a lot more this week. So hopefully, come this time next Friday, I'll be in the position to review it. But I'll promise it here. I will finish it this week and we will review it next week, Carl.
Exciting. I cannot wait to review this game. It'll be just like the Spider-Man review. I'll just be so much to say. Like it's such a great game, and I can't wait to talk about it in depth, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we thought the Spider-Man one was in depth, this is going to take a little bit longer, so that might even be a two-parter. But
never know. That's true.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll talk about that much more next week. But Carl, we'll finish up there, and I will keep that promise. I will finish the game, but we'll finish up there. So thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.